Yo people, this week I was joined by an absolute icon, somebody who paved the way for UK Black British music, somebody who inspired my whole come up, inspired a whole generation. He goes by the name of Craig David. I've got nothing but good words to say about this man, his story, his aura, his energy and his success. It was more than a privilege to celebrate 20 years of Born to Do It. This is Craig David. Yes. Big Craig, what's happening, sir?
Bro, it's good, man. You well?
Yeah, not too bad. You?
Come on.
I'm not so
au fait with the door situation. Oh, come on. At my knees when I came through there.
You invented this stuff, man.
Nah, bro.
How you doing? You good?
I'm so good, my man. Life is good. Everything calm.
Yeah, not too bad, man. It's a honor and a privilege to meet you. I feel like, for me personally, I would say that there would be no GRM Daily or anything, none of my accomplishments if I wasn't a young boy and I wasn't introduced to Craig David. Like, you was like one of the first people, if not the first person, that spoke to me as a black man doing the type of music that the UK has grown to become. Do you know what I'm saying?
Brother, I know you're driving, bro, but thank you, bro.
No,
real
pleasure.
Talk, because I know you're talking from the heart, bro.
Yeah.
It means that means everything.
Born to Do It was like
everything.
Was such an important soundtrack to our childhoods.
Mm-mm.
I feel like, especially when you're becoming a man and you're growing up, like these kind of things and moments do kind of form you and shape you, because they are kind of like the soundtracks to your lives and stuff. Do you know what I'm saying?
Totally.
Like, I probably kissed my first girlfriend when I was listening to a Born to Do It or something like that. You know what I'm saying? Like,
Bro. When
I was sad, I might put on Booty Man or something like that. Like, that's the vibe, and like, you know what I'm saying? Like, that 100. Album means like so much to me. Like, that's a UK certified classic.
Brother,
banger,
man. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank
and
you,
I want to know, like, the mind frame, because you're not even from London, you're from Southampton, as everybody knows.
Yeah.
But that doesn't make you any different to anybody who's from London. You've probably lived in London now and you've experienced it, you know the vibes.
Mm-mm.
But like, what made you for you to be able to even do what you did and make the music that you did?
Bro, you know, it's funny because, like, I think if I take it back to just growing up in Southampton and my dad's influence of playing reggae music, every time I jump in the car with him, you'd have all the ragga, ragga, ragga and reggae hits, volume one, all the way through to whatever it is. And I'm listening to, I know, the likes of Beres Hammond and Sanchez and Marcia Griffiths, and then he'd be throwing on Bounty Killer and Beanie Man. And so I was so into my reggae and dancehall growing up. And then my mum was like, was playing from Stevie Wonder and Michael Jackson and the whole thing going on. But I found like that growing up in Southampton gave me the space to just be a young kid, like be a teenager and just walk around and live like any other teenager was. But also there was a moment at which I felt like I want to create music, but I don't really know how. And I think a lot of like aspiring artists kind of get through that thing of how do we do this thing. Do you know what I'm saying? So then it just ended up being where my passion for, and being a bit cheeky with it, like, my dad was like one of the board members of the West Indian Club, which was based in a church in Southampton, and there was a DJ called DJ Flash. I remember him being on the decks playing like a little resident DJ thing. And I'd rock up and I'd say, oh, can I grab the microphone? And he kind of felt like I kind of obliged because my dad was on the board. He didn't want to like mash up his run-ins and also his wages, you know what I'm saying? I think he got the memo. But when I got on the microphone, so I ad-libbing and singing over stuff and like, man, singing Horace Brown, Things We Do For Love and all them kind of tunes. And he was like, you know what? Maybe you could be my hype guy. And I think that there was something about those experiences of being in the community in Southampton and having the time and space to nurture whatever I was doing, that by the time it got to Born to Do It, it felt like I'd had a whole life. So then I didn't know then it was gonna be what it ended up becoming, because it changed my life in ways that I could never express. And as you just said earlier, it touched you in, like, you know what I mean, ways that you're like your first kiss or who you were with, or you're using the tune as like your wingman, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
and
like,
you're for this tune for,
yeah, because, you know, like, obviously, as they say, like, no idea is original, but obviously sometimes you end up making things happen that are just so culturally cool.
Mm.
Mm-mm. Like, even like just the concept conceptually of what 7 days means. It's very simple, but it's just so like poignant, if that makes sense.
I hear you.
Like, do you get what I'm trying to say? Like, and it's just like, I'm just so impressed by your level of creativity at such a young age and the things that you were able to achieve. Obviously, as you've heard, you know what the album means and all that kind of stuff. But take me back to that time where Born to Do It now becomes as successful as it is. Like, I haven't looked at the album cover for ages, but it's just so iconic. The headphones, the thing, like, you know what I'm saying? Like,
my guy.
So when it became like the success that it grew to become, what age were you at the time?
So I think I was like, I was 18 at that time. So Rewind had already had popped off with The Artful Dodger in 99. And then I just got signed. And I remember, like, especially what the funny thing, even before when the Born to Do It even dropped, it was the fact that I was off a run of filming seven days and then walking away just before it then dropped the album. It was something about that run and Rewind that
that was a crazy run. That's just four bangers to the head.
Bro, it was taking the head to a different place, spinning, bro. Loafers were off, everything, man was spun. So it was like, by the time the album dropped, there was such this anticipation for it that I could feel something was, it was different. And when it dropped, it changed the fabric of what was going on. I went from walking up Southampton High Street with people that I grew up with, just on the calm one, and then all of a sudden it being like people seeing me on Top of the Pops and, I don't know, Jules Holland and TFI Fridays with Chris Evans back in the day doing acoustic performance. And then I walked the same high street. I was still living at home in my council flat with my mum.
Yeah, that must have been nuts, because I'm saying, so you got signed after Rewind, yeah?
Yes.
So if you don't mind me asking, then feel free not to answer.
Go for it,
bro. You hadn't had necessarily so much success so that your deal was going to be like this crazy deal yet, because it was like an opportunity, and I don't feel like there was so much precedent of UK artists, especially male R&B type vibes. Well, was there? Like,
listen, I was listening to, UK, this park US for a minute, but what we got, Soul to Soul, Linda David Hall, Seal.
But there wasn't a lot.
It was few and far
and
between.
They, and they definitely didn't do Rewind into Selector. As in, like, that wasn't the vibe. So they're probably like thinking they're taking a chance on you. So when you've got your deal for your first album, it's probably not the most lucrative thing in the world initially, right?
100. Bro, yeah. Before I got signed, I signed to a label called Wildstar, and they were an independent label, which was half owned by Capital Radio, funny enough, at the time. And there was Telstar, they were like a compilations company, and my manager, who's been with me for 25 years, Colin Lester, and Ian McAndrew, the two of them had
that's their, nuts, had, I remember so, his name.
Yeah,
from
man.
Your, like, just, albums and stuff.
Bro, Colin's like a legend in the game, man. Like, that's something we can definitely get into, just of management, being with someone for that lot, a period of time. But it was one of those things where, I remember I'd walked into his office, Colin's office, where the Wildstar, like, record company was, and I was like, yo, I don't know if this is the one. I was like, it just looked like a normal kind of setup, yeah? And then I'd go over to Columbia, and I'd be seeing, like, people like Simon Aldridge, who's one of the A&R guys there. You go into the beautiful marble floors, and you're seeing Will Smith on the thing, you're seeing the Destiny's Child and Mariah Carey, and you're like, yo, this feels like it's home. By them times, I was getting all them Sony Columbia vinyls that were getting sent out, right? I can't remember, bro, those used to be the one, bro, when you used to get them ones with a fresh Destiny's Child, Bills doesn't come free. I'd be in Epic, I was in Warner at the time, I just was in all the different companies, and then it was like, the only deals that I was getting offered was development deals, which is wild when we look back at it in hindsight. They were like, we'll give you a singles deal with the option possibly to get to an album, and we can develop you. And it was mad in my mind when I was trying to deep that. I was like, what are we developing with Rewind right here? Like, Rewind right now, currently, from what I'm feeling and experiencing, is one of the biggest records that's is forcing itself on commercial radio. I mean, pirate radio is the rinsing it. But so the only person that came through was Colin at Wildstar, and he said, you know what, I'll sign you to an album deal. And the mad thing is, bro, like, I went in off the back of Rewind. I had Walking Away already on a demo thing that had been running for 6 months or something. So everyone had that song. They were like, okay, we'll give you a development deal off the back of Rewind and Walking Away. 2 weeks later, I walk into his office and I drop him. I say, I've got a couple of songs I've just been working on. And he said, okay, play them. Okay, this one's called Film Me In. He said, wow, I saw his eyes like light up. I said, oh, you've got this other song called 7 Days that I just dropped. Bro, man, you know when you make the committed move to say I'm gonna sign you for an album deal, and then I drop him like some gems. He was sitting there thinking, we're good now. I could see he was happy. So yeah, the money wasn't really money then. It was like just getting signed was the thing.
Born to, because obviously as a child, like in my early teens, when I'm seeing like the 7 Days video, when I'm seeing the Walking Away video, when I'm seeing the Rendezvous video, and all this, these are like real expensive, glossy pieces of work. And your albums become that successful, but you hadn't yet seen like the benefits of it financially yet, maybe.
It hadn't hit the early doors, because I was, like I said, I was still at home. I was living in with my mum. Which when I know, so when I say like living in a council flat, like for me it was like, that was my happy place, you know?
Yeah,
like,
yeah, yeah.
I always want to talk about, now I know they call it social housing now, that was some of the fondest memories of my life. Like, that album was created in that little flat back in Southampton, which weirdly enough I went back to recently.
And oh, shit.
I went back and there was another family living in there. They were kind enough to let me come in with my mum, and we walked through the house again, through the flat. I went in my bedroom where I wrote Walking Away, wrote Film Me In 7 Days, all these tunes.
Oh,
and it was just so blessed, man, because it was trying to highlight social housing, saying how important it is as a foundation that we need this. Like, let's not, to the government, don't slip on how important this is to foundational situations, for especially for single parent families, you know what I'm saying, who are raising kids. Let's not slip. So just to go back, bro, but yeah, the money wasn't hitting like that. My first car was a Peugeot 206. Then I upgraded.
And you was Craig David at this time.
Man, I was that guy, but with the but then I upgraded to the Peugeot 206 with the roof that came down, the cabriolet. I don't know if you remember that one,
yeah,
but it was
a proper
boy racer one, that one. I felt like I was the guy.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But you know what? Money was starting to mount. It wasn't like, it was just that I wasn't really privy at first to how much was starting to accumulate.
Mm.
So, you know what I mean? It was such a mad 0 to 100 that. But the videos, when Max and Daniel, who did like Film Me In, 7 Days, Walking Away, especially in 7 Days videos, it was like iconic, that one. Yeah. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yo, bro, I gotta tell you something crazy. I literally just remember this, yeah? You see your, I can't believe I'm saying this on camera. You see your hair?
Mm-mm.
I had that hair for my prom in year 11.
You had the bubbles, yeah? The whole twist and everything, yeah?
I had that in year 11 for my prom, bro. I just remember that. That is scary. But
did it work? Did it drop? Did it hit it right?
Nah,
because
like,
It
didn't hit the same, my boy. It didn't hit the same.
But
I think this is what's happened. This is what's happened
to
me.
Maybe my guy tightened it up.
They twisted it too hard, Craig. You know what I'm saying?
Bro, that style there, bro, I remember like trying to like, it ran for a couple seasons. Because I remember in certain barbers, they were like, they'd have the posters of that picture.
From,
and it was like, and people were saying, yo, but bro, we've come to Nigeria, bro. Your thing's all over the thing. Like, you come, like, come, I just come Africa, bro. We got, you're the guy that people are asking. I'm coming in asking for, can I get Craig David's haircut? And I was like, yo, but if you actually know that, and a big respect to Five, my hairdresser at the time, who was in the 7 Days video, who patterned that. But bro, like, man ended up having to sleep on his face, like, to kind of keep that thing crispy, because it weren't an easy one. You couldn't go to sleep easy. Like, if you want to maintain that, after you got it all locked in, bro, it was like, man, I had to find ways to keep that style.
But is this so interesting how life works? Because, like, I didn't even think that Craig David, don't get me wrong, he would have been successful, but the hair had to be there as well. Like, that's a big part of what, like, everything just aligned. Do you get what I'm saying?
It was the combo
was
sweet. And it was funny because, like, having grown up selling mixtapes at the local barbers, and I mean, that was the real hustle that I was doing back in the day. Or if it wasn't that, it was selling like finding chocolates at the market that had like about 3 weeks left or a week left, and panning it, bro. Like, I just flipped it differently, bro. I was that guy. And then when I look at those times in the barbershop, and then I then flip to like a year or so later, and next man's posters in the in barbershop windows. It's just a weird juxtaposition. Do you know what I mean? How quick things happen, like mixtape guy to next thing, Born to Do It. You know what I'm saying? So I feel for a lot of people who, when things happen quick, but thankfully, I feel like having that period of time, as I was saying, as a teenager to live life. Man went played football and go to the park and, you know what I mean? Man's playing manhunt, running around the estate and doing it. I got to live life before it kicked in, you know what I'm saying? Which was important.
You are a guy from Southampton. You're a guy from England, but you've achieved a certain level of success. During the heights of your success, what was that moment for you when you thought, wow, like I've actually done this? Like, do you get what I'm saying? Because you know, when you're being successful and all that kind of stuff, especially when you're one of the first people to do a certain type of thing, like the precedent, do you get what I'm trying to say? Like, you're maybe in my generation, Craig David is like the iconic R&B superstar from our life, you know what I'm saying? I had a party the other day, like we're playing 7 Days, Rendezvous, all of that.
Wicked.
Everyone's going crazy, like that's what we do.
Appreciate
like,
we
really live our raps, you know. We don't just say this stuff just to say, you know what I'm saying?
So appreciate you though, bro. You know that, real.
Nah, of course,
like,
bro.
I never take it for granted, bro. Regardless.
Nah, of course. I wouldn't say it. I know you're good people. Yeah.
It's that, bro. Like I always feel like when someone says something to you, that's the, when you look at how do you value your career, or what is the litmus test for it? And like, yeah, it's cool. Like, I can talk about the legacy of the, how many records you sold and what positions you got. But when you say like a visceral thing of, we played 7 days and they popped off a club or something. I'm like, yo, that's that timeless thing is, I live for it, bro.
I appreciate you.
Real talk. I appreciate you.
Of course. But yeah, those are real things. But also for you, just a man living in this world, like what happened, what did anything, like I don't know, like, because I know you had a lot of success in America. I know a lot of America, for example, has an attachment to 7 Days and Rendezvous and songs of that nature, because I mean recently you even came out and performed with Usher at the O2.
Yeah, man.
And people hold you of a high regard in that world. So I mean, anything that you felt like was quite surreal for where you're coming from?
Yeah, it's funny you bring up the Usher thing, because that for me was, there was the first time I met Usher was when I went over to Paris and he was performing in a radio station called Skyrock, and DJ Abdel was like one of the DJs who was like, he would do freestyles and be playing instrumentals, you know what I mean? And I was like, we went in and he caught both of us, because we were literally almost going to be a sliding doors moment. So he pulled Usher back and said, listen, my man's coming in for an interview, are you cool to come in and join? And he was like, yeah, safe. So next thing you know, my man's putting instrumentals on and man's singing like, I'm singing like You Make Me Wanna, and then he's like flipping it and doing some filmy in.
Dope.
Like, we both got both got beanie caps on, I got my CD pendant sort of underneath my jumper, he's got his Usher U-Train. I was like, yo, this is a mad thing. Like, bro, like, I was only listening to, like, you know, like, all the time I think of you, holding on, just the old school Usher ones. I was like, this is my guy. So it was just like, I was meeting someone I had so much love for. And then fast forward a year or so later, I was over in America and my first Vibe magazine cover, which was a big thing. Cause you remember them times where it's like, we had our, Blues and Soul, Touch magazine, Vibe magazine, just what it meant culturally. But to be on the cover of Vibe magazine, and it was with Usher, Blue Cantrell and Faith Evans. I think the fact that man was on the cover with Usher and Faith Evans and Blue Cantrell, and Blue Cantrell was just about to pop off, right? But Faith Evans, I mean, as soon as I get home, I just can't. The Biggie remix of One More Chance, like, I mean, this is Faith. I was just like, this is mad. And she's saying, oh man, I love your tunes. And I think that for me was a big one, because I grew up listening to a lot of American R&B and hip hop. So when I was getting respect from those kind of artists as well, it translated and I was like, something's happened here. But even then, bro, I don't know. I feel like I was still like, is someone gonna pull the rug from underneath man's feet at some point? So which I later found out that was kind of a onset of a little bit of imposter syndrome, of being like, anxious, like, I got to keep it moving because someone might take this away. But then when we look at it like all these years later, it's like, well, bro, no one's taken away from me and Rewind, 7 Days Born to do it. That album ain't going anywhere. But at the time, it was like, okay. So it was an interesting period because I was sort of getting mad love, but also having to check myself at the door a little bit.
Yeah, as to,
is it a career thing or is it a one album thing? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. You mentioned that super iconic CD chain. I remember that as well. Have you still got that or did
brother
you?
Brother man, you know, I went home to, when I said about going to the flat to see my mum, I went with my mum, we went in the flat. I was on my way back to London, made sure my mum got home safe. She said, I found your CD pendant, yeah? Yeah, I left it with my mum, yeah? And she goes, do you want to take it to London with you? And I was like, I don't know what. I ain't worn this for like 20 years, I don't know why. I said, nah, keep it. Okay, let me take it with me. Bro, I don't know what it was. It was like one of them things where you the lamp and rubbing it and the genie came out. Because as soon as I was on my way up the motorway, that's when I got the call of saying, oh, you know, like, Usher would like to get in contact with you to speak to you about possible coming on stage for the O2. Next thing you know, man saying, like, calls up and says, and I'm like, oh my God, I think I might have to pull out the CD chain for the tape, bro. Man, put the CD chain on. I ain't been out for 20 odd years. Man came out, bro. Once he introduced me, I did film me in it. When it got to 7 days, man backed off the jacket. The CD chain was bam. Man had the Usher U chain, bam. I was like, you know what? This moment just for me, just as a kid growing up, listening to my man was the one. So I say, thank you, Mum. Your intuition was on point.
Where did you get that made back in the day? Because, you know, like, even our jewellery scene was in that advanced thing.
Yeah. You know what? It was my mum. My godmother was working in a jeweller's shop. And, again, this is where I was like, you see that U-chain that I need? Because I understand the importance at that time. That's why when I see people, like, the jewellery and making sure you got, like, let people know that it's a status symbol of what you're at. I understand that because
I didn't bother to that. I just knew I was losing.
No,
I just thought, you brother, know, I'm a big
man.
Big Craig.
No.
I appreciate that you came.
All I got is.
I appreciate that you was considerate as well.
Considerate. Do you know what's wild? Yeah, I don't know about you, but it's like there comes a point where I was in that phase. I mean, I got the chain done like back in the day, and she got it made, and I think I went to Dubai.
Was it white gold?
It was white gold with diamonds, and then I got the chain when I went to Dubai because it was just normal gold, white gold chain. Then I went to Dubai, said, okay, now a little something in the pocket, so let me get a little one with some diamonds on, took that one back. And then I got another one done that was just a little bit more like version 2 of the same CD chain. But I think over the years, man, I've sort of have become a little bit less is more when it comes to just for...
You don't need to do that, no.
Yeah, it's just, it's different.
I couldn't see you in a chain now, but I could only see... But I want to see you in that one.
That one.
Do you get what I'm saying?
Bro, it was in my house. I was almost like, yeah, shut up. I was like, no, it's
not
even...
For this, I was going to be like, maybe it could,
on the black, it would have looked nice, bro.
You let me down, bro. Like, bro, I would have wanted
sorry,
to... Bro.
That's,
bro, I told you, I went to prom with the...
I know.
You know what I'm saying?
Imagine my cane with a twist and the whole thing. I came with a jean jacket, bringing it back.
Yeah, you did. You're keeping it clean.
Do you know what I'm saying?
Let me tell you something else I was actually really excited about as a child. Yeah? And when I talk about these stories, and I'm talking about how you got to consider who I've ended up becoming. I've ended up becoming the owner of GRM Daily,
yes,
a company that's been able to contribute into UK culture with many other great people.
Mm-mm.
But
can I stop you there just to congratulate you and to show the appreciation and how much you are so seen for that. Like not just for the contribution of what you're doing with GRM Daily, but just what you mean to the culture. Because we're sitting in here chopping up and I, bro, coming in and talking about like my career, my life, I appreciate you. But what you bring to the culture, not just in the UK, across the board, bringing people through, allowing new artists to be seen, inspiring people. It's so wholesome, my man. And let me give you flowers while we're here, quickly. I'm chopping up. Because let's not make that light. Because there's only few and far between that people have taken that leap of faith to really hold it down and go through hard times to still come through. So anyway, I just want to say, give you flowers quickly.
Thank you, man.
Now, real talk, bro. It's not easy out here.
Sometimes the gardener never gets a bouquet, so you know.
Jeez, he's cutting with the flowers, and no one gives the man the flowers.
I'm playing. But I appreciate that. But now what I was gonna say is every single thing I'm watching in the musical space is shaping me. Like I'm watching MTV Bass, and I'm seeing like I'll see like Usher do a song with a male rapper, Or yeah, yeah. Like I'll see Ashanti and Ja Rule collab, or I see this. So when I'm young, I'm just like, I'm waiting for that moment. I'm literally waiting for that moment where it's like, yeah, Craig David's my singer guy, but obviously I also live in this world where it's like, I'm rocking with Dizzy Rascal, or I'm rocking with Kano, or I'm rocking with this person. Oh, why don't they make like a song? I'm literally waiting.
Yeah.
So I remember the day when I'm seeing Kano, Craig David. And I'm saying, yo, when I've seen this come together, now I'm saying, yo, this is like, I'm actually genuinely watching the creation of where I think this stuff is going to go. Because I'm from Ghana. I lived in Ghana until I was 12.
Really?
But I was born in London, but I lived in Ghana until I was 12. So when I came to England, I was like, why is everyone not playing English music?
Mm-mm.
Like, everything was American. Like, all my friends were banging hip-hop, American hip-hop.
Yeah.
And it's so nuts. Like, we're listening to albums like Illmatic or Ready to Die and all these things now, but not realizing that. And all these things, but not realizing how old they are.
Yeah.
Because it's just CDs, and it's not like the internet's available. You're not ever thinking, you're just assuming this is new. Like, do you get what I'm trying to say? You're driving 100. The car, no one's banging out UK music, but they're banging out Rewind, they're banging out this, they're banging out 7 Days, they're banging out this. So then when grime and stuff and Dizzy Rascal's becoming
the guy,
Kano's becoming the guy, and then you two collaborate, that's a madness to me. I'm like, oh, bro, snap.
Do you know what? I'm so glad that you, when you brought up Kano, because bro, like when that session came about, or when we got the moment to be in, because he was working with Fraser T. Smith, who'd been my guitarist for a long time. And Fraser's since produced Kano, but Legend, Stormzy, Icon. Dave, you know
the drill. Yeah.
But it was like, from P's and Q's and tunes that were just ringing off, but to then do This Is The Girl with my man, it was like, it was such a pleasure, because I could see, even in them early times, how Kano's his approach to things. I mean, then to go on off and be an actor and just like, but you could tell the foundation of Kano is like, I live this proper. So we were actually doing some like sessions together, making sure that we landed it, because we didn't know that This Is The Girl was going to be the one that popped off. But that collaboration UK-wise, I feel was really poignant. It was important because, like, as you said, it was getting very US-based. And I've even had like remixes and stuff. Like, there's a Fat Joe remix of 7 Days. There's a remix of What's Your Flavor with Twista. We've got some of American stuff, but I was like, UK. That's why I was really fond of like doing sessions when AJ Tracy came through, and we did the tunes together. There was a time when we did. I love it, man. I always feel like I'm ahead of this, just on the cusp of when someone's about to go. Like LMA, we were in the session doing songs together. The song called Talk To Me on my Times Now album, and then she hits you with Boot Up and it goes. And then Money Long on a 22 album, more recently, we did a song called Obvious, and she's been writing for so many people anyway. And then she has Made For You, you know what I mean? So I think Made For You, I don't want to paraphrase and mash up the whole thing, but I think that's the big tune, the big one. And now I was like, whoa. So I always have been like on the edge. In some ways, that's actually better than actually feeling like you're almost late to the party and you're just doing it because they've got the numbers. I like people when they're just about to do their thing. It's like it feels wholesome.
Yeah, no, I felt that at the time, man, and it was good because I was just like, it just looked like such a cool collaboration.
Yeah,
like, man. It was just cool.
It was calm. It was calm, and it was just, I could hear where the melody, because with Fraser as well, producing, I could just hear where that, this is the girl that I want, this is the girl, and then over that kind of flow, I knew that, yeah, Kano would pan.
Yeah.
So it was vibe, man. I'm glad that you brought that one up, because yeah, it brings back good memories.
So so tell me about that time where it's like, is there's Craig David, like there's Soul Solid Crew, there's Mystique, there's like, what's that environment like in terms of, because you know what the music industry is like in the UK now, it's grown up quite a lot since then in terms of people from this demographic, like there's so much more of us present in that industry.
For real.
But like obviously you might be at the Brits, and maybe the only person that you know that's from our demographic might be, I don't know, maybe like a Lamar or like
do you get what I'm trying to say,
what was that like at the time? Like, were you friends with, did you have good relationships or friendships with anyone else that was kind of doing something similar from our culture?
Yeah, I mean, it was funny. I mean, Lamal actually did support on the last tour recently, and we just chopping it up, and we were just saying about that time, that period of time, because Lamar came through, you know, he's like 50-50, and it was like using that Jay-Z like sample, and it was popping off, and he had some big hits at the time, and I was proud because I was like seeing like more people from the scene, more people of color that were coming through and actually having the flowers in the more pop field, because it was kind of few and far between like them times when you really deep it, like when you're saying like Mystique and we had Lamar coming through, but then it started to flip over where you were having like these, the garage scene had started to, it was getting oversaturated at one point, you know, it gone from being like it's underground, now it's getting its flowers, pun to coin a phrase, but when you hear Sweet From Attitude, then kind of tunes were ringing off, and then it was like it was always inevitable that it was going to go through this ebb and flow where it was going to have to go underground again, and then you were starting to see the grime scene started to pop off, and it was taking the garage elements and then just sort of like, we've got to go back here and take back ownership of this, and then it comes back up again. It's always, you know, it's always the way. Whenever it hits saturation point, the scene will bring itself back to a point where we'll call it something different, but we'll get back to the essence of what this thing is really about. So I felt like, for me at those times, like rocking up at the Brits, still a bit like, you know what I mean? I'm still the kid from Southampton who I'm waiting for there to be other places in this country outside of it being very London-centric to pop off. So when I now see it and I see artists from all over the country like having success, it just shows me how important, when we even go back to say Born to Do It, like to open the floodgates to say it's okay to not be from London, that you can be from Southampton and you can have an impact in some way. I feel it's like, we needed that in this country because there's so much talent up and down the country, but it was always like, if you don't go to London, it ain't gonna happen for you. It's like, well, no, you can just be in, where it be in Manchester, be in Birmingham, be where you wanna be, you know what I mean? So yeah, it shifted. But I still felt like it was, I had good vibes with everyone, but it wasn't like, oh man, we got crazy scene going on.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah.
It's different. Like when I see now, I see like the scene is just was wholesome. When you're throwing the galas, you know what I mean? You see the scene.
Yeah, yeah.
You're
yeah.
like, we're outside, you know what I mean? We're here today. So
yeah,
that's why I go back to you and give you flowers. Say, bro, like you're allowing these spaces to
you know,
be seen.
You,
do
you
it
just
right.
made me feel like how you felt on the cover with Faith Evans and
and Blue Control
and the boy Usher, because you know, like Craig David knows about the girl, like, you know.
Brother, come on,
that's
bro. It's elegant.
I can live
it's,
with that.
It's elegant.
Well, you know,
bro, the white looking guy. Bro, yeah, yeah, people yeah, yeah. dressing up looking nice, yeah, yeah, suave, yeah, coming yeah, through, yeah, making okay. that kind of, bro, it's super wholesome.
I want to talk about your move to America. I'm going to assume that you're back here now, right?
Yeah, yeah, back in London now.
So, what made you, obviously, silly question, because why wouldn't you want to live in Miami? But what made you What made you move?
Do you know what, bro? It was a funny period. So to give context to the move was like when I first released Fill Me In, the first, I think it was E4, did this summer series where they go to different countries, and they were doing it from, I think it was spring break in Miami. So I went out there like in 2000 and I was like, yo, what is this place? I remember the tunes that were playing at the same time. It was like, it was I Wish, Carl Thomas, that's a tune, you know, and Black Rob, whoa, it was all that kind of,
yeah,
it was
Black
happening.
Rob,
it was, oh
my
that's
god, that's my treadmill track.
Yeah, I was getting off that one. So I'm doing Film In, and I just saw Miami, and I was just like, yo, this place is crazy. I stayed in the Delano, or the Delano, there, and then every year I'd go back with Fraser T. Smith, because we were doing acoustic performances sort of within the year at some point, and we'd always go back for 2 weeks every new year, bam, bam, bam. I'm religious with this. And then it just came to a point where I found, like, in the UK, I'd got to a point where I was, like, I don't know, 3 or 4 albums in, and the something was shifting, do you know what I mean? And I was also kind of feeling like I needed to have some space, I needed to move. And Miami was calling. And there was one realtor when I went over to Miami who, there was a, you know, Mondrian Hotel? So they'd just done a...
We're actually right in front of one.
Oh, my God.
See, there's one.
You can't make it up, right? Is that it there?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh my god, you can't make the tea. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. It's always aligned, bro, of the timing. Yeah, yeah. Went there, bro. They were just starting this, the Mondrian Miami. It was, they were redoing this building. I walked in. I wanted to look at a little like holiday rental that I could rent out when I'm out, not there, but I could enjoy, not have to bring suitcases when I come back. But I go in there. The guy says, "You don't, I don't think you want to go upstairs." I said, "What do you mean?" He said, "Yeah, we got some like a next, like a sort of penthouse thing up there, but the way you were talking, like you wanted just a little." I said, "Oh, okay, come, bro, let's go." He made me feel that way. You know how they spin you. I said, "Coda, come and have a look." Bro, I went upstairs, yeah, I saw some panoramic, crazy, like the water around. I was like, it was all derelict and mashed up, yeah, but the view, oh my God, like, and then it started it. As soon as it started that, then I was like, okay, I came back, I had to try and work out a few things, ended up purchasing this place. And then I was like, I might need to sell my place here in London now, because like, it's not landing having a place here and there. So I sold my place, did the full move. Even got did the green card, did everything, bro. I did the whole nine, and it was the most craziest period for the first couple of years. I mean, as you can imagine, bro, it's Miami, and that's where I got my first sports car. Got the Ferrari, did the whole 430, being that guy trying to switch lanes, thinking like I'm Lewis Hamilton. And then after a few sort of hairy experiences in that car, you check yourself at the door a little bit. You know what I mean? You say, why are we? Do we? Okay, cool, first and second gear sounds cool, yeah, but do we actually need to be seeing the speedometer kind of hitting certain speeds? Because this thing, if one pothole here and I'm missing, do we really need that? You know the ones?
Yeah.
When you're a bit younger, you think, and then now I look back at it, I'm like, yo, bro, that was not needed. But I lived all that.
Yeah.
And then it just got tired after a while, but I felt like I'd missed home, especially in the clubs there. It just felt, I don't know, I had this thing with VIP like tables in the clubs there at that time. Like, I'm all for people going out, have the best time. Like, you've paid, you had a hard week at work and you want to go pop bottles and get VIP, go enjoy. But it just felt like when you got in there, it was a bit of a myth. Like, you go into the VIP, I don't know how you feel about this, my man, but you go in and it was like, we got the wooded table and you got the hostesses like with bare different drinks doing the thing, doing the whole same number. It was mad cramped. Man got the shades on. I never really wore the shades because I couldn't really see yet. So man of shades, I was like, bro, it's so dark and I don't know what you're seeing, but it's calm. But just live your life, yeah, live the dream.
Yeah.
But everyone was worshipping the wooden table.
Yeah.
Like it was like, some...
Like it validated them.
Wow! Bro, I looked at it and you know, you have just an epiphany. I was just like, bro, this is mad. There's one rope here. We're in here like sardines. Everyone's out there like just enjoying themselves. That one guy meets a couple of women and says, "Oh, come, let's go get some shots at the bar." Having living life. I'm over here, drinks are getting rinsed out, like everyone just drinking the whole thing, bottle's done. Next thing you got the next bottle, and then they're coming for you for like, you know what, you want a couple more. You know the moves.
Yeah.
And you're all crammed, can't move. Next man, the man speaking in your ear, you can't really hear what he's saying, and it's all getting long, spilling drinks all over you. And I just thought, you know what, this is super long. I'm tired of the wooden table now. Let me take this into my apartment. And I ended up doing my own house parties. And that's when TS5 became the thing. Just did my house party, everyone's VIP. Free drinks, do your thing, guest list, come over, use that panoramic view. And we, bro, I so wish we'd met like at that time, just for you to experience the vibe. It was patterned, bro.
Yeah,
something's so patterned. And also there was like a model agency on the third floor in the Mondrian Hotel. So it was like, they were looking like
the stars are just always aligning for your ideas.
Hi. It was wild, but yeah, it's just you get these realizations in life, and you have to just like, just again, it's checking yourself and saying, "This, yeah, we're doing the thing, but is the thing really the one?"
You know? Yeah, I mean? Yeah.
You know the vibe.
Yeah,
maybe that's an age thing or kind of growing up, and you just, because when I was 18, bro, I was just out there.
Yeah,
you
know,
outside.
No, I feel you. I want to ask, like, you've been successful for, I don't know, I want to say close to 30 years now? Like
99, so yeah, 26 years has been since I released my first.
26 years you've been basically an entrepreneur because you've been working for yourself and paying your bills and doing all that stuff. Like, how difficult has it been to be that consistent every year that you are like you always have to, do you know what I'm saying? Like, you don't look like you're having a hard time. Like, do you get what I'm saying? Like, you are Craig David. Do you get what I'm trying to say? Like, how have you managed to keep that up and keep that consistent for so long?
Brother, man, do you know what? It's that thing of, I put it back to growing up in the Holyrood council estate and understanding the value of things and being able to just have that humble beginnings that set the tone of not getting too inflated, not getting ungrounded, just keep, be careful. It's also being careful with that, because in the UK you can also have that thing of like, just be humble. But I recognize that there's a sweet spot of, you can be gracious and you can be humble, but it doesn't mean you can't turn up. Do you know what I'm saying? There's a sweet spot, because I always feel like sometimes you can feel that restriction of like, keep yourself in your place, man. Like, you know what I mean? Don't get too, America says Americans live the dream, but sometimes they live the dream and they, like I said, they come out of loafers and they twist, you know what I mean? Like, it's too affluent that you're buying bare different things but you can't really afford to sustain it. It's more the look. Like, did you need 7 security to take you from A to B across the road? It's calm, bro. But if you want that, run it. So I feel like for me, it's just been a case of keeping in check of where we're at. Also recognizing that, do you know what I mean? Money doesn't grow on a tree. So like, let's not lose sight of that. But I've been very gracious and grateful to have really good management. That's why I come back to Colin. That he's been my guy. Like, he's the person that will come up to me and say, you know what, at certain points in my career, so I think you're overspending here a bit, you need to just ease it back a bit. I'll be like, nah, it's can't be. Because you're so, sometimes you can project like things forward. Yeah, you're already seeing we've got this and this, so let me, he said, yeah, but you know there's a big chunk of tax that's put away from the thing and you're still seeing it quite, and I'll be like, yeah, I see, you're right, yo. Let me calm myself down. So, but I was able to humble myself in those situations, which meant that I'm always ready to work, I'm always ready to, but I'm also not chasing it. I know sometimes it's hard for an artist to recognize you've got to put the faders down for a moment and just do some quiet time and do some recording. It doesn't mean you're not making money and you're not working, but just sometimes when you're just always, you're thinking you've got to be out there, like you're going to miss something, that FOMO thing is a myth, bro. Because like, if you get something right and it lands, now, especially now, bro, social media will do the work for you. You don't have to put in the hours like we used to, where you're on a plane 24/7 going backs and forwards to make sure you're actually there. You can do one post from here and you're hitting the world, right? So I feel like I've just been really mindful about how I spend money, like putting money into, investing it into things that I feel are important. And that's why it goes back to like jewelry and things. Like, I used to ice things out, and bro, man got one Cartier watch for me, that's the guy, but iced it out crazy. Next thing you know, the value went down like 20 grand from me icing it out. I didn't know, no one told me anything. Man, like, bro, why did you do that? I said, that. Or the cars, I used to go crazy, the wheels, crazy. Now it's like, just put the factory till it's calm, bro. But those things are needed, you have to enjoy it. Do it.
Yeah.
And there's no judgment even if you still do it. It's just that I've realized sometimes you just gotta like ease it. You know this, Zach, if you
can feel that. Yeah, right? Nah, of course, man.
It's like there's a fine line, like you see the system in here, it's nice. But you could rip it all out and do a mad thing and put like crazy like head unit and do the whole great, and the next thing you know, like you find out like you're getting mad warning lights coming up on your finger. Yeah, you're just why? Could you not just play the tune and enjoy it?
Yeah, nah, of course.
For a schoolboy errors that you learn.
No, honestly, but obviously you've learned a lot of things.
Yeah,
you've learned a lot of things. So what I want to know is, obviously, you got a new album coming out. This year, and I want to know, what's the inspiration behind that, and what can we expect from it? Like, what is it? Why are you making an album? Why is it coming out this year?
Okay.
And what can we expect to hear from it?
In a nutshell, the album is just, I called it Commitment because I wanted to just show my fans who've been with me from day one, the people who have just joined me along the way, that I'm committed in this game. Like, I understand, like, some people want the garage guy, some people want the R&B guy, some people want the more walking away, those kind of like songs. And I just felt like I just truly listened to people this time, not that I don't listen in other times, but this one in particular was like, let me deliver that thing. I know you want that. You're not articulating what it is you want, but it's a feeling. I know you want that feeling. You want it to feel real. That's why I feel even the Commitment tune with Tiwa Savage, it just feels real. Like, Tiwa's lived some life, I've lived some life, and we're talking about relationship and commitment. It doesn't feel like it's two people chopping up who've never really gone through some life, yeah? But just as a common theme, I feel albums, there's something that has evolved and changed. I still feel like I've come up and grown up of an age that it's important to have a body of work. And I'd love to be at a point where, even if you've got your playlist and you're pulling off tunes that you like, it gets to a point where you pull off so many of the tunes that, like, of a 13 track album, you already pulled 10, 11 tunes off. You might as well just run the album through. That's my, as a songwriter, my goal. I want you to have that feeling that feels like it's authentic me. At the same time, I've listened to what you want and not just projected something on you that nobody really wanted, but make it so you don't feel, you can't do fillers, man. I remember back, remember when you used to get them albums back in the day, you'd buy it for one single and you'd hope that the thing was cool, especially on vinyl or CD.
That's what Born to Do It was like. You had bought it for a couple of songs, but then it all just worked out.
Just started to...
Yeah,
all worked out. I was so appreciative of that, bro. That, for me, is like...
Do you think Booty Man has slept on, though?
Do you know, that's my tune. Big Nasty was it. That was... Bro, in fact, you...
Yo.
When you're looking for the man that can, go check all the girls messing up with your program.
Yeah.
With lyrics to make you say damn. The Booty Man. Come on.
Yeah. Click on
www.cd.com. Easy! My guy. Come on, bro. Do you know what? I feel like, because that album has been the gift that keeps giving, and I feel like the beauty of that, those songs, is that they live in people's hearts. And I think that's what's changed for me. It's like, you, when you talk about it, you're having visceral experiences, man. You're remembering where you are, what
Come
you're
on,
doing.
Bro, man.
So when we talk about stuff, I'm like, when you make music, it may not be now, it may be in a year's time, it might be in 10 years' time, but just expressing it can land something that's timeless to someone's heart, man. That's more than any number one or X amount of streams. Yeah. So I feel like I always want to put that out and say, if it's going to do its thing, it's going to do its thing. Yeah. God willing, everything will just like land where it needs to. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, but just, for sure.
But Booty Man, yeah, jeez.
Yeah, but...
You know what was my
favorite, man. I was just going to tell you that. You know we'll be together for eternity. But man, I want, it's plain to see. I was living just a fantasy. So many things that I like to do. If ever I find a love, it's you. Finding it hard to push on through. Since I've been away from you. Jeez.
Cause you know what?
I like that. You know when it goes to the bridge?
Oh, yeah.
In the song. And then it just like... And then it just comes back in. Yo, that had me in a chokehold when I was younger. I was like,
bro,
yeah,
nah,
right?
You know what? I so appreciate you, brother, because it's like that. It's I love them songs as much as the new things. That's what makes it fun.
Yeah.
Because even when we've got a new project,
yeah,
we can talk all about the tunes and do the thing. It's like when I go out and perform, and someone hears dun, 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 and it's ringing off, and people already giving you the, you know what I mean, lighters coming out, some tutu bevela coming crazy, and I haven't even sung a word of like, on my way to see my friends, bro. It's like, how can you not? And also 7 days is always in the conversation. Like, if someone says, yeah, you know, Monday I did this, and then on Tuesday, bro, that sounds like a creative. I'm like, how? And it could be anything. It could be political, it could be in sports, it could be. And I thought, wow, how grateful am I to be in a situation where a song is like one of those chic Nile Rodgers, like We Are Family ones. You know, there's certain ones that are like woven into the DNA and fabric of something. So I'm like, bro, bless. But you're bringing that Booty Man, and you know what? Man got Follow Me, though. Remember Follow Me?
Follow me
to my bedroom. Both of our bodies.
You was feeling yourself, bro. But you know what's so mad about Follow Me? Yeah? That was like something I grew to love later on.
Okay.
Like, you know, like sometimes, like, you know, like you was going so wavy and the beat, like, and what's so important about that album is like all the beats just spoke to the words that you were saying and things you were singing.
Appreciate,
but I wasn't, when you was doing all of Follow Me, no one was following me. Like, no one was following me. So I couldn't relate, but obviously.
But what were your Rendezvous, though? Did Rendezvous with that still?
Like, Rendezvous is
more
like,
of you a can, sweet thing.
You can just imagine. You can just imagine, like, you know what I'm saying? You can just imagine, like, oh, this is what. You're thinking, oh, this is what love's gonna feel like. It feels good, you know? You know what I'm saying?